one of the most important teachings that the Buddha gave and that we discuss often is the teaching that he gave to his son Rahula when Rahula was 7 years old, when he offered to Rahula the instructions for cultivating skillful intention and skillful action. And I always like to say, you know, it's heartening to know that he gave those instructions to Rahula when Rahula was 7. It gives us cause for optimism in our own capacity to do what Rahula did, which is basically to be heedful. This is the instruction on being heedful. So, as the Buddha told Rahula, before you take an act, if it's a physical action, a deed that you're going to do, something you're going to say, or mental action, thinking, be honest and look at what's behind that act. Is it motivated by unskillful intention? Would that act be harmful to you or to others? And then, of course, he said, when you're acting, continue to be heedful, continue to pay attention to your actions. And then after you've acted, look back and review your actions as part of the process of learning to be skillful. So if your actions were unskillful, recognize that. See what you can learn. See if you can have an intention to act more skillfully in the future and have compassion for yourself. And if your actions were skillful, see the benefits in having taken skillful action and take joy in your skillful actions. Now, when Rahula was turned 18, he became a monk. And another one of the pivotal teachings that the Buddha gave was the teaching he gave to Rahula when Rahula became a monk. It's a teaching known as the Greater Exhortation to Rahula. The teaching begins like this, or the story begins like this. I've heard that on one occasion the Blessed One, the Buddha, was staying at Sawati in Jetta's Grove on Anapindika's monastery. There, the Blessed One, early in the morning, put on his robes and carrying his bowl and outer robe, went into Sawati for alms, to go on his alms rounds. And Venerable Rahula, early in the morning, put on his robes and carrying his bowl and outer robe, went into Sawati for alms, following right behind the Blessed One. I always think of it, it's like, you know, the first day in going into the family business. You know, you're going to work with Dad, you know? And you can just see Rahula trying to catch up, and he's got to fix in the robe, and he's got the bowl. First day on the job. So, and Venerable Rahula, early in the morning, put on his robes and carrying his bowl and outer robe, went into Sawati for alms, following right behind the Blessed One. Then the Blessed One, looking back at Rahula, addressed him. Rahula, any form whatsoever that is past, future, or present, internal or external, blatant or subtle, common or sublime, far or near, every form is to be seen as it actually is, with right discernment, as this is not mine, this is not myself, this is not what I am. So this is the first teaching that he gave to Rahula. First teaching that he gave to Rahula when Rahula was a monk, the first teaching that he gave to Rahula as Rahula made this effort to, was going to begin this effort to see about alleviating suffering and finding a greater happiness. Rahula, any form whatsoever that is past, future, or present, internal or external, blatant or subtle, common or sublime, far or near, every form is to be seen as it actually is, with right discernment. This is not mine. This is not myself. This is not what I am. And the way that we can think about this is what the Buddha is telling Rahula is that now that you're a monk, this is how you have to begin to look at your experience. Up until this point, you looked at your experience in a certain way. Now, as a monk, this is how you look at your experience. You look at your experience And in seeing and paying attention to your experience, you see that it's not self. So, you know, we could say that, you know, this seems like a rather challenging teaching to give Rahula on his first day as a monk. But of course, this process of seeing and paying attention to experience in this way is just that, it's a process. And it begins there as we undertake the practice and continues on. But as we practice, this is how we look at our experience. This is how we look at our experience, and that understanding will develop over time that our experience, every form, is not self. So basically what he's saying is, as a Dharma student now, or as a monk, and for us it's as a Dharma student, we have to start looking at our experience this way. This is how we have to look at our experience. This is how we have to begin to pay attention to our experience. This is the great perception of not self. This is how we begin to perceive our experience, to develop this perception. It's kind of like, you know, if you decide you want to be a botanist, you know, all your life you've walked down the street and there's been flowers and trees or whatever, you know, and you've, there's that. But then as a botanist, you look at it differently, right? You look at things differently. This is how we look at our experience. This is how we're asked to learn to look at our experience. Buddha is saying to Rahula, this is how you have to learn to look at your experience. Just like the botanist has to learn to look at trees and plants and flowers in a certain way, as a monk or as a Dharma student, this is how you have to learn to look at your experience. Begin now. So what is he talking about when he's talking about experience? So he uses the word form, and he's saying, look at form or look at your experience. Well, what does that mean? So very simply, we can think of our experience as a human being as taking form, which is essentially manifesting itself in the body as physical form. And we can think of essentially, you know, and the teachings often talk about it this way, for the purposes of really simplifying, but it's really the truth of the way things are. Our experience that manifests as form in the body are the physical sensations in the body. So the physical sensations that you have in your body, if it's the body against the chair, or a little indigestion, or an itch in the back, or whatever else you're feeling right now, it's manifesting in the body as physical form. And the other aspect of form, the other way that form, the other manifestation of form in the body is mental qualities, or mind states. So all of our mind states manifest as form in the body, as physical sensation in the body. So harder to discern, but this is what we have to learn to do as Dharma students. Right now you have some kind of a mental quality. You actually have more than one going on, but maybe there's one that's primary as you're listening. Confusion. That's manifesting as form in the body, physical sensation, anxiety, whatever it is. There's an experience of mind that's manifesting physically in the body as form. So what the Buddha is telling Rahula is, this is your experience as a human being. Experience of body and mind manifesting form. Physical sensation, mental sensation in the body. And he's saying to the Buddha, to Rahula, is pay attention to that experience. And this is what we're learning to do as Dharma students. We're paying attention to our human experience. We're learning to understand our human experience so that we can make the most of our human experience and not suffer the way we do around our human experience and find a greater happiness. If we want to be happy in this life, we have to understand this life, and this is what this life is. This life is what transpires, as the Buddha said, within this fathom-long body. Physical sensations, mental sensations. Now, Rabula, actually in that sutta, kind of plays the devil's advocate, and says, is that it? Well, no, there's thoughts and perceptions that arise out of the physical form, but your mindfulness has to begin with the arising of physical form, or the experience of physical form in the body. And that's really the first thing we teach when we teach mind states, and I always say it in beginner's classes. You know, if you get one thing out of what I'm going to say about mind states, emotions, whatever you want to call it, in a beginner's class, you've got to learn to begin to discern your mental experience, if it's anger, if it's anxiety, if it's agitation, as form in the body. So you're experiencing anger, you're experiencing anxiety, learn to be able to feel that in the body. So the Buddha tells Rahula, pay attention to that physical experience of sensation and mind in the body, and be mindful of its not-self nature. Look at that experience and see that this experience is not-self. This experience of physical sensation, this experience of mental quality, emotion, anger, sadness, anxiety, whatever it is. Well, what does that mean? What are we asked to, well, we're asked to see that this is not self. Well, what does that mean? Well, a good way to think about it is, as you look at this experience, you look at a sensation in the knee, or you look at, even perhaps more profound for us, that experience in the body of anxiety, anger, whatever it is, does this experience arise out of a fixed core? Is this experience an expression of what I inherently am? Was I born with this, and will I carry this experience with me all my life because it is an inalienable part of who I am? Or is it not self? Does it arise simply out of conditions? Is this experience of anxiety or anger, or even this physical sensation in the leg, does that arise out of conditions? It's a conditioned experience, not arising out of some permanent fixed core, but a process of events that have given rise to that experience in that moment. I mean, this is a good, you know, for us as Dharma students, this is a good place to really see the interface between therapy and not-self and meditation. You know, in therapy, I learned that, wow, you know, a lot of these feelings that I have and these experiences of anger, etc., you know, well, where did they come from? They came from my, you know, they could be traced to some extent back to, you know, the earliest parts of my life, you know, where, you know, I basically learned it from my dad. You know, I mean, we have the potential for it. I learned it from my dad. I acted out on it in my own way, and I continued to act out on it, and it's this conditioned experience. And in the meditation, through the mindfulness, doing what the Buddha tells Rahula to do, I could see that. I could see that this isn't what I am and who I am. It's just conditioned experience. It's a learned experience. This isn't hypothetical. This is something that, you know, you see. You see by paying close attention to the experience in the body. So you're mindful of this experience. If it's the physical sensation in the body, okay, this physical sensation in the body, this pain in the leg. Somebody said before the class they hurt their ribs. You know, let me look at the rib. Can I find a self there? Can I find a me there? You know, that's our challenge. You know, can you find, you know, we usually say my ribs. I'm hurting. Where's me there? Can you find a me in the ribs? Is there a me there? I mean, this isn't, again, a hypothetical question. Can you find a me in the ribs or in the sensation in the knee? Or is it just sensation? Is it just ribs? Bone. Where did the bone come from? I love the way the Thais talk about it. You know, basically, if you look at your body, it's about 800 chickens that you ate and 50 cows and, you know, a bunch of plants. That's all it is. That's all it is. Is there a me there? No, it's just all those cows and chickens and granolas that I ate. Now, what about this mental quality? What about that anxiety you felt this afternoon, or that anger? If you look at that, that physical sensation of it, can I find a me there? Is there a me in that? Is that something that I own? Is that something, you know, if I owned it, I could probably do what I want with it. Can I do with what I want with it, or does it just arise out of conditions? You know, it's like one of my teachers liked to say, you know, you didn't wake up this morning and say, today would be a good day to have anxiety. You know, that just arises up out of conditions. Pay attention, look at that experience. Can you see that? Can you really look? This is discernment. Can you, you know, so you just keep looking and you keep looking. Can I find a me in that feeling of anger? Or is that just a conditioned experience? Well, what is it actually? It's just a sensation in the body. Maybe it's a pulling or a warmth or a heat or a coolness. Is there a me in that? Look, pay attention. This isn't, I disagree. This is not about that. This is, the Buddha said, look and see that. This is what he's telling us. Wisdom isn't what he said, it's what you see and look. I can tell you that that's what I've seen, and that's what I know unequivocally from having paid attention to it and looked at it for decades. But that's not going to take you to where you need to go. You have to pay attention to your own experience. And that's a process that you have to go through, which is why the Buddha gives that teaching to Rahula so early on. Begin to start to look at your experience that way. Begin to start to understand it. You know, if you want to be the best botanist, you know, go to a good school, really start to learn. You're not the first day in botany school, you're not going to be the best botanist. You know, but you're not going to become a botanist at all if you don't start paying attention to the plants and understanding what they're about. And this is probably going to take longer than it's going to take you to get your PhD in botany, I'll tell you right now. You know, so you better start right now. Right now. Somebody had hurt their ribs. Well, you can take a moment if you're in pain in the meditation or even right now. Okay, there's ribs. Well, what is that? Is there a me there? Is there an I there? Well, what happens if I let go of the I and the me, and there's just ribs? We make this investigation, you know, we can't always be looking at our experience that way. We try to look at our experience that way as much as we can, but it's most imperative that we look at our experience when we're suffering. When we're suffering. Because our suffering, the teaching would suggest, comes from trying to hold on to what isn't ours. Trying to control what isn't ours. Right? It's like we want to control the anxiety, right? We want to get rid of it. You know? Or we want to, you know, I mean, I always tell the story about how you know, I did all these years of meditation and therapy, and I mean, I did more than anybody I know of all these things, you know, and I wanted to be largely because I wanted to get rid of my anxiety. You know, I wanted to get rid of anxiety. Anxiety is a conditioned experience that is probably going to arise within my body for the rest of my life. And the more that I think it's my anxiety and that I think I can do something about it, it's not mine, it's not me. I have to learn to develop a better relationship to these experiences that aren't mine and me, that I don't have any control or ownership over. I mean, one of the ways that we hold on to it is by trying to change it, right? Well, what would happen if we didn't try to hold on to it or change it? What we see is there's freedom. There's an alleviation of suffering. The problem with these experiences of physical pain or emotional pain is that we interfere with them, interfere with those experiences. We take ownership of them. We think, this is who I am, right? When you're really angry, what do you say? I'm angry. No, there's an experience of anger. That's taking ownership of the experience. There's just an experience of anger arising in your body. You know, once you start to see that, everything begins to shift. And again, seeing. So when we're suffering, what am I clinging to? Well, I'm clinging to the pain in the ribs. I don't like it. I'm holding on to it. What am I clinging to? The feeling of anxiety arises, and I'm holding on to it. And most of the time, we don't even realize that we're holding on to it. Part of the holding on to it might want to be pushing it away. So we look at this experience of the body, of the sensations. Is it mine? Is it mine? This pain that I'm suffering over, is it mine? Is it mine? This experience of anxiety, is it mine? Is it me? Is this some inalienable truth of who I am that is coming out of a fixed core? Was I born with this anxiety? It was like I said in the class yesterday, you know, did God say, well, you're going to be anxious, you know, and you're going to be angry? I mean, this is what we believe, right? You know, and you're going to be the person that's going to have physical sensations like that. You know? Or are they conditioned experiences that are just coming and going, not self, not who I am or what I am? So is this experience of anxiety or this physical sensation mine? Is it me, or is it merely the result of conditions? Do I have to hold on to it? Do I have to hold on to it? Can I just let it be? What would it be like to let it be? Our suffering comes from trying to hold on to what isn't ours, what we can hold on to, what we can have an effect over. When we can let go of that wanting to change the way things are, that we don't have any control over, it's like the weather. You know, is the weather yours? This is just the weather of the body. You know? I mean, you're going to suffer. I mean, we suffer so much over the weather, something we can't change, right? I mean, that's what our suffering comes from. Trying to take ownership and hold on to what can't be held on to. And a big part of our challenge, of course, is that Because we ascribe self to these feelings of anxiety and anger and sadness, my sadness, I'm so sad, I'm so fearful, I'm so agitated, my agitation, my leg, my foot that I hurt. Because we ascribe ownership to it, because we think that they are ours, we think we have to hold on because we think it's ours. Of course you're going to try to hold on to something if you think it's yours. You don't think that you have any choice. And this is really, in many ways, this is what I've seen over the years, and this has been so powerful, is you know, seeing that I never realized that I had a choice. I just figured, well, I'm an angry guy, you know, this is who I am, you know, this is what I am. I don't have any, I have to hold on, right? We all say this all the time, right? I mean, it's a little scary to let go of who you think you are, you know? But it's not who you are. And if you want to believe that it is, or continue to live in a way in which you're ascribing self to it, you're just going to be really unhappy. Because you're living in a way in which you're in conflict with the truth of your human experience, which is that this body and this mind are conditioned. I mean, the conditions that have led to the way that you experience anxiety and the way that your body feels are very unique to you, because all those conditions are so, I mean, everybody is completely unique, because the conditions that we've all experienced in terms of the different emotions that we've held onto during the course of our lives and the way the body is, how could that be? Everybody's got to be different. So don't worry, you're all different, you know, but you're all just sensation. You're all just sensation. I mean, this is why we have such problems in the world, right? It's like everybody is just physical and mental sensation, but we ascribe identity to everybody. So we have wars, and we have the war within ourselves. So we think we have to hold on. We think it's ours, but it's not ours. And this is where one of the great insights and one of the great experiences of release comes, when we understand that we don't have to hold on. We don't have to hold on. It's not ours. I don't have to hold on to this. I mean, you know, I can tell you that, but until you see that, you're still going to think that you have to. But when you start to see it, then you know that you don't have to hold on. That's why the Buddha says to Rahula, start paying attention to this, because one day you're going to see that you don't have to hold on to these things. I have told this is my own little analogy. You know, the Buddha has these beautiful analogies. This is the analogy that I developed a few years ago on one of our retreats. I sort of likened it, you know, this way that you ascribe and you hold on to these feelings of anxiety or the way the body is, etc. It's sort of like, you know, when you were 21, you moved into this apartment, you know, on Second Avenue, and there was a deli in the corner. And, you know, the first week, every day at lunch, you went down and you got yourself a roast beef sandwich. You know. And the second week, every day, you went down and got yourself a roast beef sandwich. And for the next 5 years, every day at 12 noon, you went down and got yourself a roast beef sandwich. Yeah. And for the next 10 years and 20 years, every day you went down and got yourself a roast beef sandwich. And it was terrible, the roast beef sandwich. It was absolutely awful. But you didn't think that you had a choice. Right? How ludicrous is that? But then one day somebody says, you know, you don't have to get a roast beef sandwich. You don't even have to go to that deli anymore. That's how it is, you know? I mean, we would think that's crazy, right? But that's how it is with regard to the way that we hold on to experiences of body and mind. I mean, let's face it, there's a big part of our life that is pretty similar to eating a lousy roast beef sandwich every day, right? This is the Buddha's teaching on not self. Partly, I wanted to give this talk because we were talking about this in class Thursday night, and somebody really wanted clarification. And, you know, the classic dialogue that went on at the time of the Buddha and went on in our class is somebody said, is there a self or not? The Buddha wasn't concerned with that. He said, that's the wrong question. And the famous story is the student came in and asked him that question, is there a self? The Buddha sat there and wouldn't say anything. The Buddha said, is there not a self? The Buddha sat there, didn't say anything, and then he got up and left. He had a very cool way of giving a teaching, right? And when the student left, and then Ananda later, which he said, I said, what you were doing with that student? He said, that's not the right question. He said, you ask that question, your head's gonna explode. We're not concerned with that question. The question is, in my experience of body and mind, can I find a self? In my experience, can I find a self? In this experience that I'm clinging to and ascribing self to and ascribing me and mine and I to, is there a self in that? That you can see. That you can see. And what the Buddha was concerned with, of course, is our suffering and finding the end to our suffering. And he knew that if you could see that this experience wasn't you, and came to that deep understanding, which is a deep understanding, then you would be able to let go completely because he knew it wasn't yours, and you'd be free. And that's what he was concerned with, not whether there's a self or not. So we have to be mindful of our experience, the experience that we're clinging to, the experience of body, mind, the anxiety, the anger, and see that it's not self. It's not ours. We don't own it. We don't have the ability to control it. And again, as I've said, and as the Buddha says in that teaching, he talks about seeing according to reality. The quote that he uses, and he always uses, is, every form is to be seen as it actually is with right discernment. As it actually is. Seeing that experience of form, physical and mental form, as it actually is in that moment, and seeing it with right discernment, so coming to understand it in terms of the way that we're relating to it, and the way that we're relating to it is leading to suffering or not. Well, we see that it's not self, and we see that trying to hold on to something that's not self causes suffering, and that actually we don't have to hold on to it. We don't have to go get that sandwich every day. So we have to see according to reality, but we have to keep seeing again and again and again, which is why the Buddha gives that teaching to Rahula when Rahula is 18 years old. You know, I was kind of thinking about this, because we talked about this in class on Thursday night. There's only a couple people who were there. We talked about it really in depth yesterday at the Sutta study. I don't know if there's anybody who was here who was at, you were there at the Sutta study yesterday. You know, I could say, well, maybe there were people there Thursday and there were people there yesterday and they're going to hear it again tonight. Those are the people who have one leg up if they heard it all three nights. Because that's what you have to do. That's it. You know, I mean, you go to Asia, basically, they give this Dharma talk every night. You know? Every night. Every night. And I remember years ago, I went to hear this Thai, famous Thai Ajahn, you know, went out to Queens to one of the temples out there. And, you know, the guy didn't speak English and they didn't have a translator. You know? So there was me and another guy who didn't speak Thai. And so, like, another monk, another guy, I don't think he was a monk, but he was like a senior teacher, part of the retinue of this guy, of the monk, who was Ajahn Tate, I think his name was, took us downstairs in the basement and gave us a Dharma talk, just the two of us, which was, and he basically, he was like, everything is not self. And he grabbed you, this leg is not self. I mean, it was, you know, but that's how they, you know, I mean, he did it in a very compassionate way, but that's largely how they teach. Because, you know, you have to keep remembering that. That's why we have those classes. So, you know, teaching it three nights in a row is really kind of the right way to do it. I may just do it every day for the rest of 2016. No, I'm just kidding. Because our awakening is a gradual awakening. You know, insight doesn't happen by seeing something once. Or understand, you know, even having an insight once. It's a process. At first, as we look at our experience of the knee and the anxiety, we may not see much at all. We may not see much at all. We may not see anything. But we've started to look. It's like if we want to look at the beautiful landscape out of the window, if we don't know if you walk over to the window, you're never going to see it. So you have to start looking and at least get over to the window. You may look out and it's completely foggy, but at least you've gotten there. At least you've put yourself in position. That's the first step. That's what the Buddha is doing to Rahula. I'm putting you in position so that you can begin to understand the truth. Gradually, you see more and more clearly over time as your concentration develops, as your ability to look at your experience becomes more developed, you begin to see more and more clearly. It's a that's what vipassana means, really, seeing things clearly. But that's a process. Little by slowly, as you look out the window, you look out more and more, oh, I see some trees out there. You know, the fog is there, but there's some trees, and I can kind of see them, and you start, and then, of course, there's those days, and that day comes when the fog is gone, and you see clearly. But that takes time. That comes from getting over to that window and looking out and looking out. And we begin to see clearly, and we see the truth. We see that our experience of body and mind is not self. There's no me or mine or I in any of this experience. This experience is merely arising out of conditions, a series of conditions that's gone on throughout the course of our lives. But these experiences of the pain in the knee or the butt right now or whatever you're feeling, you may not, it's not you, it's just sensation. Hot or cold. You know, we say, I'm hot. No, there's just the experience of warmth on the skin. Can you find a me in that? So we begin to see clearly. We see the truth that these experiences are not self. They're merely arising out of conditions. They're not who we are, and we don't have to hold on. We can let them be, we can let them go, and we can be free. So let's just close our eyes for a moment.